The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Merry, merry, merry Christmas. Welcome along to the GAR brought to you by Paddy Power with myself, Conan Doherty, and Mr. Conor Heenahan. It is December 19th. And Dr. Crooks are still going very, very strong. They're still in the East Kerry Championship, the O'Donoghue Cup, as they called. They played on Friday last year in the quarterfinal. They beat Neave Gaillia 3-10 to 2-5. Then on Sunday, two days later, they played in the semi-final. They beat Rathmore 117 to 211. Now they've got the final on Saturday against Kilcommon on the 22nd of December, Fitzgerald Stadium, 2:15 p.m. if you've got Nahan Else on. They're still going in Kerry. They're absolutely mad for it.
Merry Christmas to them. They are, yeah. And then as soon as that's over, then they have to prepare for in the Mullinocta they're playing in the semi-final.
Mullinocta, as we learned.
So can't see the Crokes boys having too hectic a schedule over Christmas, social-wise anyway.
It's absolutely mad. Like, and you just put it into, like, you think about Vincent's just this day last week, last Wednesday night, they won the Dublin Division 1 final. They beat Ballyboden in the league, not 18-3-4. Like, you know, this has been played in December, what was that, December 11th, December 12th.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, and it's still, like, these seasons start back in December for a lot of people. They start training again, and it's just, oh my God, like, give us a rest.
The thing is, like, Conor, I think we bring this up every year. I think, like,
yeah, it's the same.
Like, is there any point? Well, I suppose there is a point in continually rattling on about it, because if you keep rattling on about it, then somebody should eventually listen. But, like, we could tell you the same from 2017, 2016, 2015, going way back. I mean, is there, like, this is going to continue until they, as the CPA would say, fix the fixtures. But for the time being, with Croke Park saying that they're not going to review them until the three-year period that Super 8s is over, and with them adding more inter-county games to the schedule, it's just going to keep going on.
This is, like, the show is the same thing every... This is my third year with the show now since Colin Parker came on board, and, like, every year you can be sure it's the same thing over and over. So it will come to the league, but we'll not talk about it because we can't know until championships.
Yeah.
So every bit of analysis will always have that little asterisk. Then April, we'll start complaining about April for clubs because it's the first and we get all these stories. Championship will come around, we'll start complaining about TV games, what's not on TV, what RT have done, you know, and then how long the provincial series is going on, and, like, you know, how we should restructure everything. We'll try not to do it, like, but
the thing is, I suppose, as well, is that, like, because adding extra inter-county games to the schedule, and, like, you know, I think the jury is still out in the Super 8s, but even counties that, and, like, Kerry would probably win them, even though they have a lot of kind of different competitions, but would be you know, perceived as a county that runs their fixtures well. But even counties now that run their fixtures well are having this problem, and leading into, like, December, and it's not just chronic mismanagement. It's that there's so many games, and because the summer is often left untouched because it's for county now.
Yeah.
Like, clubs are just left having to play games in December, even January.
And that's it. Like, I remember making the point to you and Willie, but you were both right, believe it or not. I was saying about, like, remember the idea was play the All-Ireland Final, the club All-Ireland Final around December. And I was like, would you really want to be playing your biggest game then? But then you were saying, Croke Park, it'll be fine. And you're like, oh yeah, that's grand. But this is probably a problem, though, within counties and clubs. Like, so you're playing a Division 1 final, league final, which is up. I know Vincent's probably don't care that much about it, but it's up in St. Margaret's in December. Lovely little ground, but, like, the ground can get caught up there. It's in North Dublin. Awful conditions. If it had been a worse winter, like, you know, it would have been, like, you know, God knows what it would have been like. We won the Division 2 playoff, but that's a home and away game. Or, like, it's either home or away, so we were away. So you're going down to a ground and God knows what it's like, and it's a bit boggy down there. And, do you know, and this, like, you're playing your most important game of the season in winter at the mercy of what the ground, like, how it's held up all year.
Completely. I think we made the point about the All-Ireland final being moved back to December purely because it's not fair on, like, it'll happen to Crokes this year, Carfin, Mullinocta, Crokes as well. Like, the teams that are in the semi-finals, that the players that, like, have county aspirations within that setup are possibly going to be denied them because they're with their club until Paddy's Day. And then, like, their county's already well into the league at that stage. Unless they're established, there could be a chance that they're going to lose out to somebody who's not playing club football. But I completely agree. I mean, like, this is, again, not to reiterate, but this is the problem that, like, just comes back every single year, is that, like, because the summer months when, and like my, this summer, Jesus, this summer was like the best summer for playing football.
Yeah.
And like even, as I said, I play club football in Mayo, which would again be perceived, it like it runs the fixtures quite well. And I'd say during June and July, like the prime months when the weather was brilliant, I think I had two league games. But that like, yeah, as long as like realistically Croagh, whoever, are going to have to look at a potential separation of club and county, because until that, and until the club player is constantly kind of looked down on, it's just going to keep being the way that they're going to have to play these games in November, December, January.
Now I'll tell you what's worse, like never mind about the weather, like I'm sure every single club person has both benefited and like, you know, been in the wrong end of this. When you're playing games November, December, there's a lot of teams in the league who might be 7th or 8th and you know, their season's over, like they stopped training 3 months ago. They might fulfill the fixture, there might be a pile of reserves there, or they might just start throwing points away, like you know, like it's nobody's business, and then you start getting all these handy points. And I've definitely like benefited from it before. We've avoided relegation because you get handy points at the end of the season, or you're also looking on to somebody else getting handy points, and you're like, fuckers, like, you know.
I've been at the opposite end of that. I remember a few years ago we were trying to stay up, and we were relying on results from other matches, and teams that had got a load of points early in the season and didn't need them later on, they were losing to teams that were in direct competition with us, whereas we had a good run at the end of the season and we actually won. I think we got 8 points, which would have been like at the start of the year, if you were told you got 8 points, you would have been okay, you'd probably stay up. But because of the way it kind of manifested itself that year, we ended up going down. But it was purely because of that, because teams got their wins earlier on in the season and they didn't care about it come the end. So like, I can completely see where you're coming from on that one.
Yeah, and no, in Derry, like it's easier with Derry because they're out in June every year, but they do it really well. Like it's like recently, it's like the league is run off before the championship. So even if you're like 7th or 8th for mid table, like given that example, you're coming up the championship then in a couple of weeks' time. So everybody still is sort of putting their best foot forward and preparing. Like, so all the points still matter. There's no games just thrown in on a Wednesday night just to get it done with. Everybody's playing at the same time. Like, and but to be honest, like the scale of this, we always talk about like how much needs to be done, and it sort of got hit home with me. It was just like yesterday, I got a text message from a mate in Germany. He's from Derry. He used to play for Derry actually, but he's been out of the loop for like 7 years now. So he texts me, and like Lavi, a club in Derry, just tweeted out saying it's great to host Derry for training tonight, you know, just like,
it's
like a nice sort of proud moment when the county team comes down to train in your grounds. And I thought originally, he sent me on the picture, and I thought he was just going to slag them for boasting about it or something.
Yeah.
And he said, why the hell are Derry training on December 18th? And I was like, oh, like they've got a game against Tyrone on Thursday. Yeah. And he was like, what? And I was like, the inter-county season started 2 weeks ago. What are you talking about?
How long is this guy out of the loop?
Like 7 years. Actually, he should be well in the loop. Like, and I just wrote back to him saying, welcome to the GAA fixture chaos. Like, you know, you've missed it. Like,
yeah, that's for counties here. I think we're going to talk about it, but like clubs are well back at training, and back training well in advance. And not just, like, counties have probably, a lot of counties have been there since the start of November. But like clubs are starting to do the same thing, and you're just into this never ending cycle of a season, you know.
And that just brought me on to what I was going to start giving out about some clubs.
Here you
now.
Go.
Like, yeah, because like not only like, you know, am I giving out about seasons ending so late, but there's so many club teams back already. They've been back since November, like, and going absolutely flat out. Now I know everybody's always in different trajectories and they have different time frames and stuff like that, but you really need a break. Like I actually
100%.
I find, you know, we've talked about this before, but come to the end of the season, you're just sort of fed up with everybody and you want to sort of get away and have that time to yourself again. But what actually happens then when you're not training is you do train, because you've got the time to yourself. And then, I don't know about you, but I get so paranoid about what everybody else is doing, because you don't know what anybody's doing.
Yeah.
So then
you actually
do more than you probably would. But the fact that it's on your own time and nobody's texting you, and there's not that sort of pressure to show up in some place every single week, it's just, it's so much better for your mental health. Like,
there's no better motivator for me anyway than if I heard, oh, Conlon's in the gym and he's doing this. What?
Yeah.
Conlon's in the gym and he's doing this. And I know it's not a particularly healthy way to look at it, because you should be able to determine what works best for you. And like within reason, as long as I heard that what you were doing was within reason and not absolutely ridiculous, I'd be thinking, oh God, I have to get to the gym, or I have to do this, that and the other. But that's completely it. Like, the last few years I've started, it's not that I look forward to the end. I do look forward to the end of the season the way I don't look forward to going out of championship or, you know, having your league game being over. But I do look forward to those couple of months, because like the perception of pre-season is that the off-season is that like players go away, the old kind of school, you know, off-season, they go away, they do nothing, their social activity increases, which it should anyway, but that they do not, but that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, like, people just, because people like to get fit, they just do it in different ways, you know, like,
yeah.
I know I like to, I wouldn't go road running, let's say, during the summer, because I think it kind of, it would counteract what you're doing, you know, GA training, you know, kind of way. But I like to do it in winter to keep myself ticking over, do different stuff in the gym, and then by the time you're going back to actual training in a few months' time, it in itself has given you a new lease of life, because you're not doing what you had been doing for the couple months before that. But that's it. This is like that break that you're on about is I think is crucial, and it's like you don't get the same break come the summer. But the GAA season is so long now that you need that preseason, you need that off season. Sorry, around Christmas time, and I also think that you need. It's not an official off season. Like in Mayo, they give us 2 weeks off at the end of July, where a lot of people kind of book holidays. But if you can afford that, and I know we're giving out about fixtures and they should be played during the summer, but like something to break up that monotony as well, because otherwise you're talking 10 months at least, 11 months, nearly the whole year. And it just like people get bored, and it's no wonder kind of people go off football and stuff like that when there's such demands on people.
Yeah, and think how many times, like, this is like, if you're in a club now that's already training, but think how many times training's going to get like quote unquote ramped up, you know, throughout the year now. Like, and it's going to happen in January because you'll probably be in the gym now at the minute, but in January it's going to get ramped up because you'll be doing a lot of running and you'll be running, you know, getting it into the legs or whatever. But then before the league, you'll ramp it up because you need to get, like, you'll be talking about that one team that you're playing because you've got the fixture. 8 weeks out, you know, and you just constantly talk about this one team and forget about the 15 other games that are to come. So you'll ramp it up before then you'll ramp it up in that break that you're talking about, because it's like, we've got a chance now to get an extra pre-season, and then before championship you'll go at it again. So you have to sort of keep peeking for all these things anyway, and this is again another reason why you just need to sort of go away for a couple of months and then come back sort of refreshed,
definitely
mentally more than anything, because I do hate the, like, I hate the constant, like, sort of messages as well. So you're always on, like, you know, you're always sort of, you know, reading stuff and being told to drink water, or, like, you know, be prepared today. Don't be messing around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know, and like around this time of the year, we also get a lot of emails and they say, like, a lot of whistleblowers from clubs around the country, boys complaining about contracts that they had to sign, or, you know, somebody from Ulster sent this, like, you know, WhatsApp group image in the other day, and it was, we've all heard this one, but they have to take a picture every time they're in the gym. Now, but everyone knows the way around that now. Like, just bring a couple of t-shirts if you want. Like, you know, but even just this, so like, this group is now filled with people taking pictures of themselves in the gym.
Yeah, that's getting way too common as well. The GAA is terrible for imitation as opposed to innovation. So, if you heard that the club next year, geez, lads, they're in the gym three times a week and they're taking a picture every time they're in the gym.
Yeah.
And like, it's butty as in like, well, we have to start doing that. Why? Like, do you know, like why do you have to manage my life to that extent? Can you not? Like, it's one thing if you, like, if there's kind of constant monitoring of your progress as opposed to you having actually to take a picture. Sure, a lad could take a picture in the gym, just go to the gym, take a picture and actually do nothing. But he can still put the picture up in the WhatsApp, say he was there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you're actually monitoring their progress in terms of your, and I know we're getting very scientific here as well, but like, say, you know, you test them maybe at the start of February and then 6 weeks later you test them again, then to see are they making any progress, as opposed to, well, I haven't come on any bit at all, but I have sent a WhatsApp message every do you know, it's just it's ridiculous.
You're sending a picture of all these extra weights just added on to the bench press as well.
Put on more weights, there are no more.
It is fun, because I don't like sounding like an old dinosaur as well, because the funny thing is, like, I did sports science in college, like, you know, but I'm always giving out about, like, you know, what people are doing and these fads that they're doing and stuff that I can absolutely see the benefit of. So, for example, like, we had a coach one time, conditioning coach, and he was actually quite good, but we spent a lot of time, like, you know, working on sort of running techniques and, like, how to land properly and, you know, functional movement and stuff. Like, again, stuff that you can't see a benefit of, but when you're training two nights a week or three nights a week for 60 to 90 minutes, like, that's too valuable, I think. Yeah. Like, I think this stuff is, like, extra stuff. If you're an NFL player, it's going to help get a couple of fraction of seconds off.
It depends on how they get across. They get that message across. Like, I don't want to sound like an old dinosaur either, but, like, I would have definitely, when I started to kind of feel the benefits of prehab and preparation more so later in my career, and I actually wished a career, I call it. But, you know, I wish that I actually paid that much attention kind of earlier on, but it's about how that's communicated. If you get a guy in for a session and he takes 60 minutes or an hour and a half to go through stuff like, as you said, functional movement, landing techniques, whatever. Whereas if he does, if he was to try and communicate that in maybe 15, 20 minutes, you know, and just like short and sharp and like while he still has people's attention, because if you do that for too long, you are losing. You're just like the more you rattle on, you're just losing the group straight away. It has to be, you know, very well communicated and like the, you know, kind of given examples of the benefits that it can provide as well, you know. So, but I would agree, it's just sometimes that there's way too much emphasis on that sort of stuff and not on the basics that you actually require.
Like. And again, like, I'm not, it's all context. I'm not knocking that stuff, but it's like, I do think that so many people are obsessed with finding that last 1 or 2% in the GA. Like, they're desperate to find it, that little bit extra. That's why you see all these different new fads and stuff. Mm. That they sort of forget about the 98 to 99% of stuff. Like, and I think you should only really be concentrating on that last 1 and 2. You think, what can I do different now to sort of get us over that line? Like Mayo say.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
only when you have the 98, 99% done, then you can start looking at that stuff.
That's exactly it, yeah. Yeah, and sometimes I wish that as much attention was paid to... And I'm sure like at intercounty level, it's way more kind of scientific and specific and stuff like that. But sometimes having, I'd say every club player has gone through this sort of thing at some stage, and you're wishing that they just paid as much attention to the nuts and bolts stuff as they actually do to, or they might get a guy in for 6 sessions in a row and he's all, like, it's all about stretching and functional movement and stuff like that, which is beneficial. But are you doing 6 weeks in a row maybe setting up attacking plays, or how you're going to set up against a specific team? Or like, one of the things that I found just training over the years is that, like, because it's just some of the basic skills are just assumed that you just have them, like, as in the simple matter of putting the ball over the bar, just like maybe doing that, everybody gets to do maybe 20 or 30 shots, you know. It's just, oh, we don't need to do that, so you know how to do that. And then you're wondering why you have 15 or 20 wides during a game, you know, that kind of way. So I have found that imbalance between trying to really striving to get that 1%, and then, as you said, just forget the 99 that works in the first place.
And I'm speaking from experience, because I coached that famous under 16 team that I coached, but I remember the first year I was in with them, and I was, you know, trying to be this real, like, Coach Carter again, who comes in with all these different ideas.
30 coming on there, like, I
But like, I remember halfway through one of the seasons, I might have been at a talk with Mickey Moore or somebody who was real sense, like, and it was something about football and those, like, skills being assumed, as you say. So I got them all lined up then one day, this is like June, and you just got them to race with the ball. So you're just doing a normal sprint, but you're running with the ball. I swear to God, one person made it up to the far line without dropping the ball.
Yeah.
I was watching going, oh, bollocks, like, what the hell have I been doing with these boys? Like, you know, because it hasn't been Gaelic football, they can't solo the ball to themselves.
But they were the best functional movers of the under 16 Derry Championship.
You want to see the way they were landing, like, they were brilliant at landing. But, like, funny, I slag Willie about being an old timer now, listen to us two here, like, you know, just giving out what the kids are doing these days. Parky Keeve, it's an absolute mess at the minute. There's a piece in the Irish Examiner. The Croke Park Stadium and Commercial Director Peter McKenna has been talking to them. He's estimated that the final cost of redeveloping Parky Keeve will come close to 110 million euros, which is 24 million more than what the 2017 estimate was. And now Croke Park has been summoned in to help for 3 years. There was a convention on Saturday, and there was a claim at that meeting that 86 million, the figure that was bandied around at the start, said that's how much it would cost, that was the total cost of the project, which doesn't really reflect well on the executive then when it has been revealed that it's actually 110 million, it's 24 million unaccounted for.
Oh, it's just
that
they add 24 million.
Yeah, don't worry about the 24 million, like, you know, and this is at the convention. Like, so since then, there's been a newly formed board of directors for Parky Keeve, and they held the first meeting on Tuesday. They're chaired by GA President John Horn. Michael O'Flynn, Tom Gray are both there, and they're tasked with examining figures as well as to clarify costs and relating to Cork Stadium redevelopment to sort of clarify what the hell's happened with the money. But basically, they've overspent on the stadium. The whole pitch needs dug up, apparently.
And
this is the first year of it. And Croke Park have now intervened, and they're going to be there for 3 years.
Woolley would have a field day, I think, if he was here, because obviously his bugbear is that, like, county boards should be run like a business, like, with managing directors, chairpersons, etc., to try and ensure the smooth running of stuff like this, because this isn't like the Galway thing that's going on at the moment, but the mismanagement of finances there is absolutely ridiculous. And just going, like, speaking of stadiums, Casement Park is still up in the air, I think, for the time being anyway. And I was reading that, like, what happens with Parky Keeve might have an actual impact on what happens with Casement Park. And even going back to Mayo, like Mayo went into serious debt with the mismanagement of McHale Park over the years. Like, so this isn't an occasional thing. It's not a one off. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like the GAA, whether they like it or not, and I'd say that a lot of people within the GAA would kind of resent the grab all association kind of tag that goes with it. But like when you see figures being bandied like that, and like the fact that this comes from, some of this was paid for by the government as well, it's taxpayers' money and stuff like that, and like you can't blame them for wondering what the hell is the story.
Exactly, you say taxpayers' money, like that's really dangerous. Like, you know, people like to bash the government and what they're spending and whatever, but like they put money into the Park of Creeve, and like this is money from everybody in the country. Yeah. And then there's just 24 million unaccounted for.
Exactly, yeah.
As of Saturday, and then Tuesday it's completely different. And I think Hugh McKenna was tweeting, now some people are projecting that it's going to be closer to 40 million. Like, you know, now this is just other people projecting that. But Hugh McKenna was tweeting saying that the overspend alone, if it is getting up to close to 40 million, will be the same cost as the likes of Liberty Stadium, St Mary Stadium, King Power Stadium.
Yeah.
So all these new Premier League grounds. So that's just the overspend, never mind the whole cost of the stadium. The extra money that they spent would have built Premier League grounds.
And you know what, like when you mentioned those Premier League grounds in particular, they're kind of, I don't know the capacities off the top of my head, but they're medium-sized, you know, Premier League grounds, whereas the GAA seems to have...
Well, that's the Swansea, Southampton and Leicester, like the champions. Yeah, they're all nice, like medium-sized grounds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Compact, like I'd say, I would estimate in the region of 25,000 to 40,000 capacity. Whereas the GAA seems to have an obsession with these grand kind of arenas, do you know what I mean? Like for the size of... Like I would be of the opinion, like the whole Newbridge situation this year, for example, Walsh Park and Waterford, I think every county ground should have a really serviceable, like, top quality, in, you know, ground that they can call home. But it doesn't have to be 30 or 40,000. Do you know what I mean? It could be like, how often are they going to fill that? Do you know what I mean? Yet we have, looking at this happen with Porky Creeve, looking at Casement Park, I mentioned McHale Park earlier on, and like, is it a thing that like, while if every county had something that like adhered to all the health and safety restrictions, whatever, and like capacity figures that are required by the GAA, but like then would you be looking at a thing of centralising like the biggest games in provinces? Because like how often are these grounds that cost so much money, often tend to lose money then after that as well, do you know what I mean? How often are these being filled? Whereas you could have, if you were to be more pragmatic about it and build stadiums of those medium, perfectly serviceable medium sized stadiums, that would be, I would say, would be a far, far greater benefit.
Yeah, like it's real sobering, because like I'm thinking of Derry, and Derry have a stadium that's 20,000, I'd say, around that, and it's never filled. Like,
exactly. Yeah,
when it's 8,000 or 9,000, it's like, wow, this is class.
Yeah, but if Derry get a game, if they get a home Ulster Championship game, perfectly suitable to field and home Ulster Championship game, perfectly suitable to get somebody in the qualifiers. If they get an Ulster final, they have to go to Clonus.
Yeah,
like I don't see the why. Like, and I know Cork, like Cork, obviously being Cork, the real capital, whatever, would have to, and Porky Creeve is iconic, and like they would see themselves as having to have a stadium like that. But like, within Munster alone, then within, I would say, a radius of, you know, like a 2-hour drive, you'd have Killarney, which is 40,000, I think, and Thurles, obviously, which is the biggest, which is the big dog in Munster, which can hold something like 70,000 people. Do you need that amount of grounds in that vicinity?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think it's something like, the stadiums are built already, so what can they do? But it just maybe hints at some bad planning on behalf of the GAA.
Well, don't despair, because John Horne has come out and he has said, I am delighted that the GAA has such a positive asset in Cork, and I am optimistic about the future of what is a state-of-the-art facility.
There you go.
So there you go. Why am I even asking about the 24 million? So that's it. That's the present. That's all done and dusted. Mickey Hurt has been very bullish in the media, I thought. He came out and he just basically said, Tyrone want to get back to the All-Ireland final. Don't know how Mayo men will think of that. But he's come out and he said, that's our aspiration now, to get back there. If you want to get used to the experience of last year's final, then you can only get back to the final. I'm not saying it won't be of some use for us to try and progress through the championship, but that's a long way off. So he's just sort of talking about then one game at a time.
Yeah.
But his point is, I want to get back there. I think we've a resilient enough side now. We've spent enough time. So even if we get knocked out of the Ulster Championship, we're saying we've enough time in the qualifiers in the bank not to be too downhearted, and we'll find ourselves in the qualifiers. But his whole aim is to get back to the All-Ireland final, and I really like that. Like, it's just somebody coming out and saying, let's do it.
I don't think that's particularly bullish, to be honest. You reached the All-Ireland final last year. You've been semi-finalists twice in the last, regularly in the top four teams.
2015 semi-final, 2016 quarter-final, lost to Mayo by a point. 2017 semi-final, against Dublin 2018 final.
Been either, if I'm not mistaken, been knocked out by Mayo, Dublin or Kerry in the last
Mayo, Dublin, yeah. And the only other team that had beaten them was Monaghan last year.
Last year before they bet them again.
Yeah,
yeah. So like you're within the top four. You're clearly within the top four teams in the country. Only two of them are going to reach the final. Surely that's your ambition, to be one of them.
You're raining on my parade here.
Well, I'm sorry. No, I saw that. I was like, well, what's he going to say? Well, if we make it to a semi-final, we'll be doing okay. Do you know that kind of way? I know it's a very kind of Irish thing to be kind of playing down your expectations, but like, I thought that was a very realistic kind of aspiration for Mickey Hart and Tyrone this year.
Very good. All right, I'll leave it there. Well, actually, all our news in Tyrone is actually, maybe this is why they're aiming for the final, because Peter the Great is going to have a stamp in Tyrone again. Young Dara Canavan, son of Peter, has been called up, despite not playing senior championship for his club just yet. He did shoot the lights out, though, in the Division 1 final, which is played at a more acceptable time. It was in December for Errol Kearn. And that was against St Enda's of Oma, like, so not just any old club, like, and it's a big rivalry, and they're one of the proper big dogs of Tyrone. And Peter Hart, who's a club mate that Errol Kearn was talking about him, he said, "I'm not really surprised that he's in the panel, to be honest." Himself and another young lad, Matthew Murnaghan from Killyclocher, are both 18. We are both 18, like. That's what it says in Irish news. We're both 18, like. We saw them playing against each other actually in a county minor final this year, and the two of them stood out. They're two great lads and two great players, so when you have that potential, those boys, they're great to have on the panel. Dara Canavan, did you see any of the clips of him playing minors?
Only briefly, but like everything I've heard about, we've obviously talked about David Clifford a lot, and before David Clifford kind of tore it up in the minor championship before he became a senior,
yeah,
it was like, Jesus, can this guy really be as good as they're letting on? And he was, and he's better.
Yeah,
everything I've heard about Dara Canavan suggests that he's going to be amazing, and like, There's obviously a lot of pressure that kind of comes with that, but then because of that, you often hear that like the people that surround them then try to play down expectations. But what it seems with Dara Canavan is that he's too good that the likes of Peter Carr can't even if he tried to play down expectations. No, he's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing more of him. Yeah, definitely.
Not quite the David Clifford just yet, but he's still Peter Canavan's son.
Yeah, well, that's
so,
it. Yeah,
like, we can be very excited about him.
Yeah.
Another forward for Tyrone. Like, here we go.
Yeah. I just hope it kind of obviously the whole father son thing, we've seen like loads in football. Some of them live up to it, like Paolo Maldini.
Yeah.
Some of them Jordi Cruyff don't. So he's quite good. He's just obviously not good. To be the same as his dad.
Owen Murphy has been given out on Twitter, and it really has a point, right? So there's a piece on the Sportsio website by Niall McIntyre, and he talks about Westmeath club Multi Farnham. Last year they were in the All-Ireland Junior Football Final, but they go up the week before up to Croke Park because they're in the final, so they want to go up and see where they're going to be playing, get to see the changing rooms, but they're not allowed onto the pitch. You know, they're allowed to do everything else, allowed to tour the vicinity, but they're not allowed onto the pitch. And it turns out it was the same for Glenmore, which is Owen Murphy's club. The junior hurling final in 2016 they were in, they got a, you know, tour of the changing rooms and stuff like that. They got to look at the pitch, but they weren't allowed on. And when you look at the pictures, then it is a bit sort of daunting. Like, they were playing actually Owen Rhea Coleraine from Derry, and like, you know, you just see a big picture of sort of empty Croke Park is in the background anyway. And you see these junior hurlers playing, and you're like, whoa, like, that is the very first time they're getting onto that pitch, is when they come on to warm up.
I
can only imagine like how scary it would be. But so Owen Murphy's come out, and it was absolutely brilliant, right? So you're watching Ireland's Fittest Family, aren't you? Like, you're a big Dancing with the Stars fan. This is right up your alley.
Winter reality TV.
Joe O'Connor, so he seems to be a referee. I think he's involved with Limerick actually as a coach there, a conditioning coach maybe. So he just puts up a harmless enough video, and he's doing a trial run around Croke Park where Ireland's Fittest Family final appears to be, and there's all these obstacles, and he's climbing over the wall, and it's just this, it just seems to be him on his own in the empty Croke Park, climbing over this wall and landing on a big soft mat and running on to the next one. And
one of the obstacle courses in Ireland's Fittest Family, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So Owen Murphy just quote tweets it and says, "So when Glenmore got a tour in Croke Park before the Club All Ireland 2016, we couldn't walk on the grass, yet they leave this shite go on." When you see it in the context, and you see this little video going underneath his tweet, and your man jumping over the wall and then running over the hill 16 and jumping up another wall, it's absolutely mad when you think about it.
I just wonder when that rule was brought in, because it gives me an ideal opportunity to tell my Croke Park story.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we got to an All-Ireland Junior Final in 2010, and we went up the day before, so we played on the Sunday. So I think they rotated every year, so the junior and intermediate finals, the hurling was on the Saturday that year, football was on the Sunday, I think then the next year football will be on the Saturday night, and then
and yours was Saturday, was it?
Or no, ours was on the Sunday, but we went up Saturday. So the Hurling was on that Saturday night. We were there on Saturday afternoon. But same as Glenmore, we were given the tour of the dress rooms then, but we got to go out on the pitch. And funny enough, Castle Gregory from Kerry, who were playing at the time, were on the pitch at the same time.
Alright,
they're down one end and we were down the other, but there was we weren't told anything. It was just like there was 30 of us went out on the pitch, we had footballs and everything. It wasn't a training session, but it was just a kick around, and I made sure to score a point because I knew I probably wouldn't get to the score one the following day, so made sure to score a point. And just then we were just kicking around for about 20 minutes, but no restrictions whatsoever. So I've no idea why. Like, you can listen, like, it's fair enough on Croke Park to introduce a rule that you're not allowed on the pitch, but apply it everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you know? And like, you can see how it'll get on people's grill if something like Ireland's Fittest Family, I'm sure there's a big contract with RTE that they're allowed to shoot the final there, but it's just not a good look.
Yeah, like Joe O'Connor is just like, he's just caught in the crossfire here. Yeah, like, you know, he's just collateral damage. It's just hilarious that was the video underneath Owen Murphy's tweet. So that was 2016 that Owen Murphy's talking about. The one Niall's talking about, Multi Farnham, was 2017. You're talking about 2010 and you were allowed on. We all know why you would be, especially Croke Park. Like, you want to get on the pitch and see what it's like from where you'll be playing.
I'm not saying it gave us any huge benefit to be on the pitch.
Yeah.
Like, it was great to kind of see the vantage point from, I got to look up at the big screen and just kind of got to take in your surroundings, as you said. And like, I'm not saying I'm into visualisation or whatever, but if somebody was, they could stand in the centre half back spot or stand in the corner forward spot and, like, you know, get to just see what it's going to be like for them the following day. But we'd like, I'd say no more than ourselves, they got a sufficient enough warm up then before the game the next day. But it's just you're so close and then you can't, you're just like, the pitch is just there and you're on and you can't touch it. Yeah.
And then you put that into the reality of, like, you know, June 2011, Take That concert was on right in the middle of the summer, you know, July 2017, U2 concert just right after the Leinster final, and all these pictures that are on Sportsfile of, you know, the grass getting brought up and just, you know, new sort of like surface laid down for the concert and stuff. And then there was a brilliant picture, July 2009, just a big dump of sod just lying in the middle of Croke Park, right in the middle of the summer, like, you know, and you can't get 30 players on to walk around and their trainers.
That's it, yeah. And you wonder what harm it's going to do, even if it is shortly before a game, like, but, like, you know, within a couple hours there's people going to be on there in studs. But
yeah,
I'm sure Croke Park will have some kind of official line on it. But
exactly. Up next, we got Stephen Poacher.
Somebody said it's as ugly as Marty Morrissey at football.
We body in fairness, he wouldn't know a penalty if it bit him in the arse. I mean,
what is the point of this? They swear allegiance to the cult of Cairn.
But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
Is managing Mead at some stage in for the rest of your life a pebble in your shoe that you want to get out?
No, I think I've got over that.
Have you?
If I went to do that, sure, who'd keep manners on Joe Brawley on the Sunday game? And you couldn't expose the nation to him on his own, could you?
Okay, delighted to say that Carlow's senior football coach, Stephen Poacher, is on the line. Stephen, you're one of the key figures of Carlow Rising. How are you coping with all the fame?
Well, Carlow Rising had nothing to do with me. That was something that was labelled a few years ago on social media. I think, no, listen, we're enjoying it, Cone. You know, I think, you know, people probably maybe on the outside look in and probably say about Carlow and the exposure we get, and, you know, and we talk to the media maybe more usually than most people, but for me, Conan, like, there's deeper issues there. You know, like, Carlow's competing. It's a very, very small county. It's the second smallest county in Ireland, in fact, you know, and it's competing with the likes of Sean O'Brien, with rugby. You know, it's competing with soccer. You have Padraig Gammon there as well, playing for Newport, who's a big profile. You know, obviously, Hurling, the size of the county, you know, the Hurling team's competing. They won the Joe McDonagh last year. They're now up in Division 1B. You know, they were in the Liam McCarthy at one stage last year as well. So to compete with all that, you know, the more exposure that football gets in the county, Conan, the more young people that will want to play the football, you know, and I can't underestimate the impact that the two games on Sky Sports had for us a couple of years ago with Monaghan and Dublin. You know, what that does for further on down the food chain, it's you can't measure that. You know, you really can't measure that. And, you know, the more exposure that football in Carlow gets, because you got to come from where, you got to realise where we're coming from. Just before Turlough took the job, Carlow were beat by 28 points in the championship by Meath and finished rock bottom in Division 4. You know, so we're coming from a very, very low base now this last few years. And for where we are now and what it's done, like, the academies, the Carlow Colts is flying. There's serious work going on there with Sean Gannon, Ronan Dempsey are doing fierce work there behind the scenes. you know, all of a sudden it's fashionable again to want to play for Carlo. You know, there's people that want to play for Carlo now. And I suppose I got a little glimpse during the summer when I went down to the golf day, and you know, I met a guy actually at it, and he was saying, "Look, we tried to get a Carlo jersey to put on the mannequin at the golf day, and they couldn't get one because they were sold out." And at the All Ireland final, myself and the wife were in Myers before the game, and I noticed a Carlo jersey in the distance, and a gentleman and his daughter came over, and the daughter was wearing the jersey, and it happened to be the sister actually of Brian Cawley, who was a member of the panel. And he says to me, "Look," he says, "see, 5 years ago, this girl wouldn't even have dreamt of wearing a Carlo jersey up here, you know, but she's proud to wear it now, you know." And it's massive corner for the county, like it's huge, like, you know, and it is a big part of, you know, the progress and development that the county hopefully will continue to make, like, you know.
That's brilliant, because I was just going to ask you, do you feel like a change in the place? But is it sort of gone these days now? Do you feel like there's even a bit more critical analysis within the county itself? Like, are people that involved in it?
Fuck yeah, there's no doubt. Listen, you're gonna get criticism no matter what you do or where you go. Like, you're never gonna please everyone, and you know, for us, we just keep doing what we're doing. All we want to do is compete. You know, so it's not. You know, we're not looking to do anything else but really compete. And I suppose we have a very relaxed atmosphere in the camp. You know, we've a happy camp. I'd like to think we've a happy camp. You know, the players are happy. They enjoy going to training. They enjoy playing football. We enjoy it ourselves. You know, and we don't. You know, we don't put media bans on people. We don't sort of. We don't talk about drink bans. We don't do anything like that. We celebrate wins. You know, we celebrate defeats. You know, you win together, you lose together, and you know, and we're enjoying it. Like, but look, obviously, you know, as expectation levels within the county will raise, then obviously, you know, people within the county obviously will start to look maybe in a more analytical point of view and say, well, can we do this and can we do that and can we change this and can we change that and could he play there and could he not be playing? But you're going to get that no matter where you go. You'll get that in your junior club team, you know, and you'll get it in a senior club team. You get it everywhere you go. So it's no real different to that. But I think it's been huge, and I think last year, you know, the lift that it gave the county. You know, kind of like, you know, life is tough at times, you know, and it can be tough out there. Like, and to give, people said to me, I remember Benji O'Brien, one of the selectors, said to me, people in Carlo, all they've ever done is wanted a team to follow, you know, and I don't think that they could have complained over the last few years. Like, we've had some great days out, and we played three of last year's All-Ireland semi-finalists over the last two seasons, and, you know, we had our days out in Croker against Laois, and, you know, all right, they didn't go our way, but, like, there was nearly 10,000 people in Croke Park that day from Carlo, like, which is phenomenal. Like, it's absolutely brilliant for the county, you know, so hopefully onwards and upwards, you know.
So tell me, how did a down man come to be involved in Carlo?
Yeah, well, I know, Colin there would probably say I was chased out of Down, but that's actually not the true story. Like, no, it was actually quite funny because look, I'd worked for 10 years with Down at all levels, you know, from under 15 right through to under 21, and I'd coached at senior club level and Down for 10 years in Division One, and you know, I was just finding things, you know, probably a bit mundane and a bit stale, and you know, obviously at that time, Turlock and Tommy, I was running a coaching day in Kilkeel actually, and last year it was the largest coach education event in Ulster. We had over 175 coaches at it, and this year in Lismore, we actually had, I took it to Lismore this year, and we had 240 coaches from all over Ulster. But Turlock and Tommy used to attend the day, and they approached me way back in November 2015 and said, you know, would you come in and take a couple of sessions? So in 2016, I took, I think, two, three sessions throughout the year. Just one before the championship game again, Louth, one before the qualifier again, Wicklow, and then one before the game against Cavan in the qualifier. So I had three or four sessions, and I really liked the setup. I seen Fianna. I got a look around the place, and you know, it was a really good setup. And later in that summer, Turlock had sort of said to me, "Why don't you come aboard on a more full time sort of basis?" Like, and obviously I had to speak to the boss at home and see what she thought. But sure, you know, her life was engrossed in football too. Her father would have played for Tyrone for 10 years, so Marie is a football woman, and she understands the demands that would have been made, you know, and the sacrifices that would have been made. So she says, "Look, go for it." So started training them in November 2016, and then we had our best National League in 12 years. We just missed out in promotion by a point, and then we went in that championship run where we had five championship games, and we got a bit of momentum going, Conan. We decided in year two then that we'd really push for promotion, and we got it, you know. So it's been work in progress, but Turlock's done sterling work behind the scenes. Turlock's, I can't speak highly enough of Turlock as a, not even just as a football man, Conan, but as a person. You know, he's a fantastic human being, and you know, he's a real family man. He just loves Carlo. He loves everything about Carlo. He wrote a book on cycling and talking about cycling routes in Carlo. He loves the Barraway, and I think sometimes he'd prefer to live in a tent on the Barraway than live with his wife in the house, you know. But he's a great guy, and he just loves and sleeps and drinks Carlo football, you know. And I think that was a big thing too, Conan, which I think is very important in any management team. There was a great chemistry among us, you know, and the players were good guys and good players, but there's nice chemistry among the management team as well, and you know, we all get on well, and I think that's important, and that reflects then in the ethos of the group then as well, you know.
And how is it, like, obviously you've got a good dynamic with Turlough, but how does it work then, I suppose, on the training pitch? Like, are you taking the training sessions? Like, what, I'm always interested to see how coaches are with the managers, and what way does it work between each county?
No, I suppose when I went in a couple of years ago, you know, Turlough, we talked about, you know, role clarity and role acceptance among the players, but it's the exact same among the coaching staff as well. Like, we don't have a massive coaching staff, like, but you know, when we met the players in 2016, like, we would have made the roles of the coaching staff very clear. Damien Sheehan does sterling work there with the strength and conditioning in Carlow IT, and looks after the players fantastically well. And you know, Turlough just more or less had told me in 2016 I'd be in charge of the football coaching, so you know, I would take all the football as such, you know. But it's it works well. It's a nice dynamic, you know, and you know that we've Tommy Wogan there, Turlough's loyal assistant for many years now with the club and the county, and Benji O'Brien and Lachlan Mann as well is there as well as eyes in the stand, you know. And it's good. It's good dynamics, and we've obviously added Kieran Roach this year, Scarry's man, who's been managing Scarry's, and Kieran's come in and he's doing a little bit of coaching with the boys as well, which is good too, and he's dipped his foot into it, and he's enjoying it as well, you know. So
yeah. Very very good manager over a very good team there, I might add. So he is.
So I believe, Conan, yeah, he speaks very highly of yourself, like he says now, because you're a little bit lazy off the ball, so I don't know if you'd fit into our system, like, you know.
That's the only reason I wanted to ask, but now you're ruining it for me. No, like, but it was interesting because I remember, like, this is when I was a minor, I remember taking a team under there was a manager there, and we were working on this thing before championship, whatever system we were playing. But then it came to championship, and it was almost like he wasn't at the sessions, and he was just doing something completely different to what we had been working on. And yeah. I obviously blame him for it then. But have you ever found anything like that? You know, that have you been butting heads at all? Like, you know, where he's obviously the manager, but you're working on something, and does it always come out like the way you might want it to come out?
Yeah, no, listen, I think myself and Turlough are singing from the same hymn sheet. Like, you know, I think we all are, you know, and I think we know that, you know, we play in a certain way, and, you know, and that's, you know, football has changed, Tom, I suppose, a little bit, you know, and I suppose any plan is better than no plan, you know, and I always believe, and this is something that I've always said to the players, like, you know, I think if you might have the best plan in the country, you know, it might be the best plan, it might be the best game plan, it might be the best way of playing football, but all the players don't buy into it, then it's not worth anything, you know. But if you've got a plan that 100% of the players buy into, a game plan, and everybody knows what they're doing, and there's role clarity and there's role acceptance, then you have a chance. You have a chance to compete. And that's ultimately what we want to do. All we want to do, Conan, is really just compete, you know. And that's, you know, we're not talking about winning All-Irelands or winning Leinsters. Like, we want to compete. We want to progress as much as we can. We want to leave a legacy in place. You know, this team can make their own little bit of tradition for Carlow, which they already have done. They were the most successful Carlow team in 75 years last year, where people might argue against it, but they were. You know, and for me, that's, you know, we had our first promotion in 40 years, which was huge for the county. And it's about leaving that little bit of legacy that will hopefully leave a system and something, a structure in place that young lads coming through, then it's a natural progression, and all of a sudden then it becomes fashionable to play for the county. People will want to play for the county, and it filters on down through the food chain. You know, you now have minor players looking up to, you know, the Daniel St. Ledgers and the Dara Foley's and the Paul Broderick's and the Brendan Murphy's. They're looking up to these players saying, you know, I want a piece of that, you know, and they're coming through the under-20s. I went to watch the under-20s playing last year. You know, there's some tremendous talent in that team, you know, some brilliant young lads like young Connor Doyle and Josh Moore and Niall Roach and those lads, Connor Crowley, and those lads are all stepping up into the senior panel now, which is the first time in a long time that Carlow's had a natural, you know, evolution, that they've brought those young lads through, which is fantastic for the county, you know. So I do feel that, you know, it's important. It's important, and I think that in any game or any team you're involved in, like, you know, you need to have a plan or a structure going forward, like, for it to be successful.
Like. Yeah, and, like, you're going into your third full season, I suppose, with them now, and nobody can deny, like, the progress each season's gotten better each time. And, like, even Woolley, who is so bored of watching defensive football, he could understand why a team like Carlow might have started out defensively. But, like, if you're self-reflecting now and looking to progress again in the third season, is there anything, did you think yourself that you might have got too predictable, like, if you couldn't transition, you couldn't score as easily? Did you find that this year, and is that something that you're targeting?
Well, I suppose go back to day one, and we looked at it, and the first thing myself and Turlick done was we done a real analysis of where we were and where we were coming from. You know, we were coming from having the worst defensive record in the 32 counties. You know, we had conceded, I think, something like 129 points, I think, was our against record, you know, going back 3-4 years ago, and we were sort of saying, we can't win football matches with that, you know. So you have to start there. It's like a defensive shape. If you've got a defensive platform, it's like building a house, Conan. You know, you start with the foundation and you build up. You know, you don't start at the top and build down, you know. And for us, that was the important thing. And I think year one was installing that. And, you know, I suppose people were very critical of the way we played against Dublin, the way we played against Monaghan. But remember, we were coming from the bottom of Division 4 to competing against two of the top four teams in the country. And like with 5 minutes to go against Monaghan, we were a point up. You know, in the 64th minute, we were a point up. And, you know, we made ourselves competitive. And I suppose then year two was the next progression. You know, can we add to the offensive end of things? And I suppose statistically, when you look at things, you know, we had a plus 35 scoring difference last year, which was the best in the four divisions. I think we hammered in 15 goals. We put 217 past the Division 2 team and 214 past the Division 1 team. You know, so there was stages last year where we did show signs of improvement offensively. And believe it or not, like, regardless of what anybody thinks, the players will tell you themselves, everything we do in training is based around offensive play. Like, and that's actually true, Bill, you know. And every game finishes with a score, starts with a score and finishes with a score, you know. And that's just the way we coach, that's the way we play. The boys enjoy it. And, you know, I think there's maybe a stigma attached to Carlo because of the games against Laois, you know, that were maybe highlighted a bit more. And, you know, to be fair to Laois, you have to be honest, John Subra is a shrewd operator, he's a good coach. But you know, there was no team as well versed in the dark arts as Laois were last year. You know, they were very good at checking your runs off the ball and getting away with it and things. And I hold my hands up, you have to play, you know, you play with the strengths, and, you know, whatever goes to you, goes to you, you know. And I just felt that at Laois were probably, you know, the second best team we played last year outside of Tyrone, to be honest. You know, I thought they were very well organised, excellent defensively, you know, retained the ball superbly well. And, you know, it's just probably them games were probably hated a bit more, Conan, you know, than the games against the likes of, you know, for talk's sake here, you know, we had a fantastic win away to Waterford where I think we scored 2 or 3 15 possibly, I think it was. I can't remember statistically now what it was, but, you know, I think the first three National League games we were averaging 2.14, 2.15 a game, you know, and those games weren't highlighted. It was just really the games against Laois that were probably highlighted, and then there was a stigma attached to it, you know. So, you know, we played within our strengths in the championship, but, you know, I thought against Sligo we were absolutely superb. And I think 2.17, I'm not too sure what came from play, like, but, you know, the same against Kildare. And I know we did get a lot of place balls against Kildare, like, but the reason we scored free kicks was because we were getting ourselves into an offensive situation anyway, you know. So, look, it's I'm not really here to defend the way we play or what we do, like, but
no, exactly.
At the same time,
yeah.
I think at the same time, you know, I think the stride, I don't think there's an actual grasp of where we've come from, Conor. I really don't. I don't think people are grasping at all where we come from. Like, you know, when Turlick arrives down to training and they're bottom of Division 4 and the job's being described to him as the poison chalice, and he's going to training and there's 12 guys at training, you know, and maybe 3 or 4 of them aren't fit to play senior football, you know. So, like, I think when you look at where we're coming from now and where he's come from and where he is now, I think, you know, the whole thing deserves a lot of praise and a lot of credit, you know.
Oh yeah, and like, that's like, listen, like, I agree, like, and God knows I've had enough arguments with Willie, but I suppose, like, I would just, in his absence, I would just ask, like, you know, do you think, like, he would say, I didn't see the Laois game, but his, like, sort of story of it is that, you know, they set up defensively, and because they did that, you couldn't break them down. And I was thinking, is that part of the reason why you've added to the backroom team now, to try and, you know, to have something else to your arsenal?
Listen, I suppose I say this to players even, you know, in football, going, if you stand still, you go backwards, you know, and that's life, you know. If you stand still and everybody moves forward, you go backwards. And, you know, any sport's the same. You look at soccer, for example, you look at rugby, you know, if teams stand still and think that that's going to be good enough, then it's not, you know. But look, I suppose for me, you know, if you're talking about the Laois games and you go back to the Laois games, I suppose in the league final, like, you know, we had created 3 or 4 great goal scoring opportunities. And I think if we'd have taken one of those, you know, it could have been a different game. The same in the championship game as well. We were very unlucky in the Leinster semi-final on a couple of little occasions. And I know, you know, when you're watching the game and you're not impartial and you're either a Laois man or a Carlo man, you probably can't see that. But when I actually, you know, cut the game down and analyse it through a video and go back through it really, really stringently and analytically, you know, look at the game and try in finer detail, you know, we created a lot of moments there where we were denied with maybe a poor decision, or, you know, maybe just a running being checked off the ball, and maybe a free that should have been given, or a goal chance that maybe didn't happen. And, you know, those are small moments, like. And I suppose, listen, the way it was more or less, that's how those games evolved. And I think as well, people are quick to forget as well, like, there's a rivalry and a derby element to it as well, you know, and a lot of our players maybe played the occasion and maybe played the fact that it was Laois, and maybe if it had been Westmeath or Wexford or Offaly, it might have been a completely different game, you know, but maybe the fact that it was that local rivalry, maybe the fact that there is that history and tradition between the two teams, and I didn't really understand it until I got to Carlow, like, and then I didn't really understand it until I seen how passionate Wooly is about not talking about Carlow, you know, but I didn't really understand the rivalry that exists until I got down there, you know, and I see that, and I know the likes of Greg Cullen and stuff like that is very close to Carlow, and there's the Laois players would socialise in Carlow and vice versa, Carlow players socialise in Laois, and there's an element of that too, Cullen, there's no doubt about it, like, you know, regardless of where the two teams set up, there is an element of derby-ish about it as well too, you know, it's a bit like when, you know, Fermanagh played Armagh last year, the two teams know each other so well, they played each other three times, and, you know, the championship game was a war of attrition, like, I think Armagh were beat 10-7 or something, and people were saying it was horrible, it was a terrible game, then 2-3 weeks later, Armagh go and play Roscommon in one of the best games of football of the year, you know, and you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, there has to be, you know, there has to be something there, like, you know, so some teams when they come against each other maybe nullify each other, but every game's different, and I think that's why maybe coming under the rules, I think that we need to be careful what direction we're going in football, Conan, because I think if we're going to try and force every team to play the same, you know, I think it'd be a boring spectacle. I think that's what we're trying to do, you know, like, every game has to be different. I could name you games now, for example, and I named one there, Armagh Roscommon, but let's look, Laois Wexford was a brilliant game of football, the first round of the Leinster, the boys were all down at it, Laois were 10 points down, came back, won an extra time, phenomenal game of football. Tyrone Monaghan up in Omagh was outstanding game of football, you know, Kildare and Mayo, the game of the summer, you know, ourselves and Kildare, fantastic game of football. You know, even the semi-final Tyrone and Monaghan, so intriguing, like, you know, high-scoring, intriguing, tactical warfare. I actually sat and was just amazed at the strategic element of the kickouts, for example. I was obsessed with watching Rory Beggan and Niall Morgan to see what was going to come next, you know. And, like, I think we're going to lose all that. And I felt last year football was sort of coming back round to becoming more offensive, and I do, but I mean that, you know, genuinely. And I do feel that, you know, there's two patterns of attack and play for me. You either run the ball or you kick the ball. You know, the good teams can do both. They can mix it up. You know, you watch Dublin scores last year, some of them against Tyrone, you know, and you watch the likes of the Owen Merck and the way he broke from defence. And, you know, but there's a time when you do need to retain the ball. You know, there's a time when possession is important, and there's a time then when kick passing is important. You know, it's nearly the zoom crew zoom element. Like, you know, do you go hard with a fast break and get the ball early forward, or do you bide your time and be more patient, you know? And it's the same in all sports, you know, every sport evolves and every sport has got tactics, every sport has got different teams that play different ways. And you look at soccer recently there and the outcry about Mourinho, and, like, you know, and you look at the way Klopp sets his team up and the way Mourinho, like, everybody's different, you know, like I think Sean Dyche, I've used this example before with Burnley, you know, he finished sixth in the Premiership with Burnley by scoring something like 37 goals. You know, it's unheard of, you know, but he played to his strengths and he played a certain way, and you knew what you were going to get, and other teams will play a different way. And, you know, I use soccer as an analogy, like 4-4-2 counter-attack under Alex Ferguson. Then it went to, you know, a sort of a more sort of Spain-type game in around the late noughties where you had that sort of ghost striker, ghost number 9. It was a 4-6-0 formation and keep possession, and then we've now evolved now to a 4-3-3 and high press, and I think Gaelic evolves naturally too, you know, like, I know Wally's mentioned in the show before about Jim McGuinness and things like that, but those days are gone, like, you know, they are gone, like, you know, it's not as negative as that anymore, like, it's really not, like, and when you watch the you know, people talk about the hurling and things like that, but there's a lot of poor hurling games too. I was in Dr. Cullen Park this year for the Limerick Carlow game. It was a non-event, you know, and you know, in the name of God. So, like, there's a lot of, I just think what we need to improve is the exposure to these games. Like, Laois Wexford, for example, first round of the championship, why not give that game 15 minutes on the Sunday game instead of giving the game that was on live that day a half an hour, you know, that people have already seen, you know, give that game the exposure. And people might say, you know, our game, I think our punditry, I think that's what needs improved. I don't think it's the rules. I think the level of punditry and the level of analysis within the game needs improved. And the exposure that the smaller counties get as well needs improved, you know. And that's my only worry, you know, and I've maybe gone offline a little bit here, but it's my only worry about the Talk of the Bee Championship. And I've heard in the QT that it's a done deal for 2020. But, like, for me, you know, that's my worry, is that if I was to say to someone who's in the edges of the hurling fraternity, who won the Joe McDonagh Cup last year? I would say 50-60% of those people couldn't tell you who won it. Now, the only reason I know who won it is because it was Carlow.
Yeah.
But that was the B competition. And, like, they got the column inches they got, Conan, it was embarrassing. Like, well, I felt sorry for the lads. You know, they got a snippet in the paper, and I think they got 15-20 seconds in the Sunday game. You know, and we're talking about it'll improve. It won't improve anything. You know, that's the worry for me. You know, the rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, because obviously we talk about, oh, you know, we'll give them Division 2 All Stars and stuff. But like, we got Division 2, we got Christy Ring All Stars. Like, you know, but we didn't talk about it here. Like, and you know, I do agree with you at the expense of sounding like a bit of an echo chamber here. But just talk to me about the new rules. Like, you've seen 4 games now, I think, and I'm just interested. Yeah. Obviously, the hand pass is the big one. Like, of the games I've seen 2. It still seems like it's pretty easy to keep possession if you want to. And, like, the people are getting blown up for times when you actually really need a hand pass, when you're coming out of a tight area or coming out of the corner. Like, and it's just, there's a lot of groans because it seems very needless sometimes when the referee's blowing it up.
No, there's no doubt. Listen, for me, I've seen 5 games actually now, and I've watched them very placidly from a distance. And to be honest with you, you know, I'm going to be honest, I bit my tongue. When the rules came out, a lot of people came out with outcries and talked about them. I said, no, I'm going to give these a chance, you know. But after 5 games, I've watched 4 of Carlo's games, and I've watched the neutral game as well. I watched the university team playing Armagh. And to be honest with you, you know, the hand pass rule, it's a shambles. It really is a shambles, because we're trying to create something that's not natural. You know, that really, it really is not natural. And it's not natural to our game. We're creating a hybrid version of the game. You know, the referee, and for me, the biggest issue, and this is something I'd be interested to hear a poll from referees, not now, but give the referees 2 or 3 weeks of a Bourne Cup, McKenna Cup, etc., and let them sort of see, because I know from speaking to a couple of referees, and I'm not naming them, but I know from speaking to a couple of them, this is, Stevie, we're finding it very, very hard to process everything, you know. And I think if referees, or some referees are probably afraid to maybe come out because they maybe don't want to lose, you know, their presence or whatever among the hierarchy, and maybe they don't want to be, you know, because it might be held against them if the rules stay in. That might be, well, he's complained about them. So, but I'd love to know the insight from referees, because they're having to deal with so much. And I'll tell you what teams are doing now, Conan, which is interesting. And, you know, on the second pass, teams are shouting, he has to kick it. So they're listening to that, and there's a lot of, you know, the referee's having to process all that. And then, for example, we played Westmeath, and I think they were shouting, he has to kick it. And we actually made our 3rd hand pass, and the ref blew it as a free.
Yeah.
Because he probably was trying to process it, you know. And it's just too much. It's too much happening now. Yes, there's maybe an argument for the mark inside or whatever it happens to be, but what I've noticed some teams are doing now are getting 2 men, double sweepers, really back in really quickly to cut out either side of the inside line, to cut out that mark element, if that makes sense. So they're getting 2 men straight back in. As soon as they lose the ball, you know, shut it down, whatever, they're getting 2 men back in, and they're cutting out that area that a player would move into. Because the mark necessarily, in fact, people probably think the mark, Twin Towers, Tommy Walsh, Kieran Donaghy, but it's actually the opposite. You know, you're looking for inside men that are really good at lateral movement, who can move into space and collect the ball on the run and put their hand up and tap one over the bar, you know. So it's not so much a big man on the edge of the square. You know, it's actually a more measured pass. You can pass the ball from just outside the 45, 20 metres into a man's chest who's running onto it. But teams are filing men back really quick, so that just cuts that element out. So the only way you're going to break a team down like that is by being patient and moving the ball from one sideline to the other, you know, through maybe a bit more possession, being a bit more patient, you know, waiting for late runners to come, waiting for those gaps, stretching teams, you know. But like, I did feel sorry for some of the teams that we played against, not even ourselves, because there was some great moves. A kick pass in a centre-half forward who led it off, a couple of runners coming, and on the 3rd pass, he just needed one more, even to open up a goal opportunity or even open up a scoring opportunity. And he was blown up because he turned to try to come back and he was turned over, or he had to get a shot away unnaturally, you know. But I was chatting to a couple of university managers, and I know Willie's given me stick for being cynical in the past, but this actually didn't come from me. But a couple of university managers who actually said to me, look, Stevie, if we're going down one channel and we get bogged up, we're going to turn and kick the ball back 70 yards to our goalkeeper. And I thought, Jesus, like that's what we could be watching an awful lot of, because when the stakes get higher, it's all right now going and looking at the McKenna Cup and the Bourne Cup. Like, we played Kildare the other day, and we gave, I think, 9 players their senior debut, and it's unfair on them too, because these young lads are coming. Like, Kildare's bringing in Jimmy Hyland, for example. Jimmy Hyland's an All-Ireland under-20 winner, and they filled their team with most of the first team the other day, so they were quite competent in the way they played the game. But we're bringing in lads who have played junior football or intermediate football in Carlow, who have never played senior county football in their lives. They're coming in to get a taste of the game, and they're having to process all this as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's so difficult and so hard on them, you know, as well, to make the step up, because it's hard enough, Conan, to make that step up. Like, it really is, no matter, without having to process all this as a player, you know. And you're finding then players will get their hand pass back, get your tree back, they're shouting, and they'll take a wee dink ball 5 yards, like, you know. And it just makes the game very unnatural, you know, and a bit of a hybrid version, you know. So
yeah.
The sin bin, I've no issue with the sin bin. Sideline balls, does it really make a difference? I don't know, you know. But and the kickouts in the 20 metre line, you know, for me personally, Stephen Clarkson revolutionised our game. Like, Stephen Clutson went from an average of 15 seconds every kick out to getting the kick out down in 8 seconds. Like, that was brilliant. So your ball and play stats, you know, good teams will want the ball and play stats to be high. So good teams will want the ball in play. For example, Leinster Rugby, their stats of keeping the ball in play are way hugely higher than anybody else, because, you know, they want that ball alive. They want the ball. They want the game played at a high tempo, high pace. Dublin are the same. Dublin want the ball in play stats very high. So the average time for a ball in play in a 70-minute game is around about 32, 33 minutes. But that's actually gone through the roof recently, because the ball's in play a lot more. Keepers are getting the ball away quicker. You know, tactically, I think the game's evolved to a different level. It's interesting and intriguing now, some of the battles you have. Players physically are a lot fitter, a lot sharper. You know, I think we've got a great game, a great product. I think we need to be very careful where we're going. Like, you know, I think we've got a great brand, a great game, a great sport. And, like, if people were to watch the National League, if some of these games that I spoke about were to get more exposure, you would actually see that we've got a lot of good football games out there. You know, a lot of good football being played.
Because we need to promote the National League more than what we do is another thing. Because we have this great competition here that we always just say that should be the championship. It's like, well, we have the league, it's great, enjoy it, and then we'll enjoy the championship. Yeah. But tell me, like, I suppose the argument would be that, of course, that you'll come out against the rules because it doesn't suit you. Because, like, you know, again, Willie's idea, now I think it'd be easier to defend with the rules, but his idea is that it's harder to transition up the pitch because you'll need a kick pass. So how would you sort of respond to that? Like, you know, that of course
we've actually got some brilliant, like, Danielson Ledger, Brennan Murphy and Darfo, they're like some of the men are some of the best kick passes of the ball I've ever worked with. Like, the best kick passer of the ball I ever worked with was Martin Clark, like, and you know, Brendan's the same, like, the phenomenal kick passers of the ball, like 60, 70, 80 yards, like, no, so there's no issue there. Like, we're not concerned in that element. I'm concerned for the game in general, not ourselves, like, you know, and I think every team's got concerns. I think Malachy Rourke's come out this week with concerns. I think Kieran McGeaney's come out this week with concerns, you know, and I suppose the Dubs have not come out and say anything because they never say anything, but deep down, but privately behind the scenes, they are concerned. And I think, you know, I've heard rumblings on the QT that, you know, they wouldn't be too overly pleased with the rules. But, you know, so, like, it's not just us, it's not me, you know. I think in general teams will start to realise in the next few weeks. You know, I spoke to Benny Coulter the other day. Benny's in with Paddy Talley this year as well, and, like, Benny, you know, one of the most natural forwards that the game's seen. And Benny said to me, "Steve, it's a farce, you know, it's a joke, you know." And I met him the other day and we're just chatting about it in general, like, and he says, like, the couple of games they've played as well, he says, it's terrible. Like, he says, it's just so unnatural. He says, if you're in trouble in the halfway and you're turning, you're kicking the ball back just to start reset again, you know what? And that's allowing teams then to filter back. So it's actually becoming a lot slower. The game's coming a lot slower. And I actually think it's going to make the game a little more defensive. I know that might sound mad, but I actually do think it'll make it a more defensive. And then you get the situation going, and this sounds extreme, like, but you know, I'm thinking about it all the time, and you're thinking, do we get the situation where you're 3-4 points up in a game with 10 minutes to go, and you just filter everybody back and you kick for touch? Seriously, like our team's going to start doing that, where they just kick the ball 70 yards down the field and say, right, come at us again. So they've only got 3 hand passes. They're never going to break us down. You know that sort of way. You know, yeah. Are we going to get to that stage? You know, where you know you're going to go back into the dark ages again, where it's like literally, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I'm only thinking out loud here, but I'm just worried. I'm worried about the direction the game will go. You know, if these rules remain in, I am worried, and I really don't think we need to be altering the game as much as we do. You know, like, there was a few rules brought in a couple of years ago. I remember the hand pass rule; it had to be a clear strike of the ball and things. So that rule now, I don't think I've ever seen one of those blown. Actually, in fact, I've seen one blown in the last minute of the Wee Door Scotstown match. And to be fair, it probably was the correct decision. It was a throw ball.
Well, that was just a throw ball.
The ball about. It was, like, but teams are throwing the ball about like a basketball now, and there's no, the referee's not blowing anything, you know. So, like, you know, sometimes I think we just bring rules in for the sake of it at times, you know. But these rules aren't small rules. Like, these are monumental. This is a different game, Conan. This is actually a different game now. And I don't mean that. And I know Willie would argue whatever. It's a game that's going to be better, but I don't think it is. I think it's becoming a very hybrid version of Gaelic football. And as I said before, I think we've got a brilliant game. I think there's been some class games this year. You know, I love watching Dublin. I love watching them, even though people might be bored of them winning. I'm intrigued by them. I'm intrigued by their matchups, how well they get them right. I'm intrigued about the way they break out of defence, the pace in which they transition. I like they're the most organised team defensively in the country, whether people would argue against it or not. Tyrone went 5-1 up against them last year. They dropped everybody back, 15 back, you know, and you could see how defensively organised they were at that stage. Like, you know, and you know, I think the game's in a good place. I think there's been some poor games, of course there has, but I just don't think it's as bad as everybody thinks it is. I really don't. You know, I really don't, and I think we need to be very careful in the direction we're going with these rules. We really do, you know.
Stephen, thanks very much.
Colin, not a problem.
I said, are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed? I said, we have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us. Didn't even stir, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his line, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Okay, I won't call it Paddy Power predictions. We'll just call it Paddy Power. Here's what's coming up over the next few weeks.
Enough, yeah.
So, because we have no idea, like, we have no idea what these teams are going to be playing. Like, so there's obviously O'Byrne Cup and McKenna Cup on Thursday night. That's tomorrow. So obviously they're playing Kildare. We have no idea what teams are going to play and what they're like in the new game that we have here. I'm hoping that Derry are better in the 3 hand-pass rule than they are in the normal. But they're playing Tyrone in Celtic Park actually at 8 p.m. So I don't hold much hope, to be honest, though. Kerry are playing Limerick in the Munster Senior Hurling League, 7:30 p.m. Austin Stack Park. Wexford against Laois in a scorefest at the O'Byrne Cup, 8 p.m. Saturday 29th of the season. I'm really jumping ahead now, but this is all that's left for the year. So I might as well. Clare v Cork Senior Hurling League, it's just thrown in on its own, 2 p.m. at Cusick Park. And Sunday 30th of December, McKenna Cup, Cavan v Down, Breffni Park, Donegal v Queens, Ballybuffet, Monaghan v Antrim, Clonus, 2 p.m. And actually we got the fixtures there during the week of the All-Ireland Club Hurling and Football semi-finals, which is more interesting.
Which are on when?
They're on February 9th and February 16th. So the Hurling's on February 9th and the football's February 16th.
Is there a potential clash with Sigerson or Fitzgibbon, I wonder?
Yeah, probably, actually. And there's no double header either, which is, they never really do it. Like, and I know the worry is, like, for example, you take the Hurling, you have a team from Galway, team from Antrim, team from Waterford and Limerick. So they're probably worried about where is the middle point for all four of them. But St. Thomas is a Galway. You're playing Cushendall, Rory Oge, so that's in Parnell Park in Dublin, 3 p.m. They could have had both of them in Parnell Park, to be honest.
Yeah.
Ballyhale are from Kilkenny are playing Ballygunner. I said Limerick. That's at 5 p.m. at Seppel Stadium. This is February 9th. There's no point in me telling you what time it's at, really. Like, you're not making these plans.
We've got 6 weeks to tell you.
Yeah. And the Corrifin, Guido, it's on Carrick on Shannon. It's the next week. 1:30 p.m. I might as well keep going. And Mullin Yachta against Dr. Crokes is in Semple Stadium in Tipperary at 3:30 p.m. on Sunday, February 16th. That's all we have time for.
That's about it.
And we have one more show left for the whole year. We're going to leave you be over Christmas. You know, just like those club managers that like don't leave you alone. We're going to leave you alone.
Yeah, talk championship structures, nothing like that.
Nothing like that. Not until 31st of December.
Second of January, maybe.
We're going to have another show for you on New Year's Eve, and that's it. I wish you all a very Merry Christmas. Yeah, and I hope it's a good one. Enjoy.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, he gets such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we put him back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.